Welcome, everybody, to another RhinoCast. We are here on the phone with Jody Stevens in Memphis. Jody Stevens, of course, a founding member of Big Star. Hello, Jody.
Hello, John. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
And not that we need an excuse to speak with Jody Stevens, but Big Star, actually, you might know, has a new record out as of September. Was it September, Jody?
Yeah, the release date was actually September 27th, and we're all excited about it.
Yeah, we're excited about it, too. It's called In Space. It is their first album in about 12 years. Correct me if I'm wrong, and the first studio album in about 30 years. Is that right?
Yeah, our last studio album was actually the third album, and it was completed in either late 74, maybe, early, yeah, I think late 74. So it's been, maybe 30, 31 years since our last studio record. The third album actually was released in 78, so it took a while for it to get released. But
oh, okay. Yeah, I'm reading the date on the Ryko disc issue here. But yeah, it was something of a story that I guess it was released overseas and it was bootlegged and the running order wasn't solidified for quite a while. Maybe we can, let's go ahead and talk about that while we're on the subject.
Well, when we completed the record, it's my understanding that it was shared with some people at major labels and comments were, gee, do we have to listen to that again? It wasn't a very positive response to the third record. It's, the third record's a pretty dark, disturbing, but also very sweet and sounding and touching. And I think Big Star's always been pretty honest in its recordings and relating, a particular lifestyle or what's going on in people's lives. And, it was the third record was a pretty brutally honest account of where Alex was at the moment in his life. And, it didn't go over very well at major labels. It took 3 years for somebody to step up and release the record. And yes, it was released in England first and on an English label first and then here on Passport PVC in the States.
Right. So you actually got some pretty blunt comments then from label folks and business industry or music industry types.
Yeah. And I heard all this sort of after the fact, but it's fun when people have such an animated or kind of response to things or such a clear dislike of something. I prefer either people loving something or hating it. But for somebody to say that's okay.
Right.
Boy, that's a real slap in the face. So yeah, I kind of enjoyed hearing those comments about the third record. You know, I got to admit too, at the time I didn't quite understand the third record. And, I've just come to realize that I think it's a brilliant revelation of what was going on in Alex's life at the time.
Absolutely. It's got a little bit of everything, and certainly the production is phenomenal. Yeah, just the power of emotion, and also, you get some of those Big Star highs, I think, also, The power pop stuff is certainly not absent. Of course, the record today is regarded as a pretty much a hands-down classic. And also, I think, you'll hear a lot of one of the most depressing records ever, which I don't know if I agree with that, but I can see how some might say that.
It's a pretty dark record. And while you were saying that, interestingly enough, the song Kangaroo, I've always thought was more of an experience or capturing a moment in time than I think a song, but Jim Dickinson played drums on it, it's a happening. But I never thought anybody would have covered that song. But as it turns out, Jeff Buckley covered it, and And I actually got to see him do that live in a small club here in Memphis before he died. And that was pretty amazing. And this Mortal Coil, I think, did a version.
Right.
From what I understand, Beck does a version of it live from time to time. So it's, you know, over the past 30 years, I guess it's reached a lot of people. I'm always surprised.
Right.
Initially I was surprised that people related to the album as much as they did, as in people explaining that they had gone through hard times and the third album was of some comfort.
Sure.
That's a pretty powerful sort of thing to share. But,
right.
You know, it kind of runs the emotional spectrum. It, to some extent, it has a sense of humor and all the way ranging down to, you know, just raw, dark emotion.
Yeah, that tends to make for some of the best records. While we're on the subject, I just want to get this out of the way. For You is one of my favorite Big Star songs in the... in the canon, so of course,
well, thank you.
Of course, you wrote that and sang on it.
I did. It's the I happened to learn some chords on a guitar and sat down and banged that out. I don't know. I've just always been proud of that song. It's,
absolutely, those gorgeous strings. I love the strings. I'm a sucker for the Baroque chamber stuff. So,
well, you know, I had it was part of what I envisioned the song, including strings. And a friend of mine, Carl Marsh, was an arranger. He's kind of a multi-talented, multi-instrumentalist and arranger. And so I brought Carl Marsh in to do the strings. And he did, you know, I thought a wonderful job of it. And Alex seemed to like the idea and started exploring, you know, Carl doing string arrangements for the other songs. So it was a kind of an interesting introduction, and Carl and Alex worked really well together, especially on songs like Nighttime and those, you know, icy string sounds. And they're as much musical parts as they are painting some sort of imagery too.
Sure.
Or some sensory sort of feelings, or not quite sure how to explain that.
Okay, well let's fast forward then to the new record and kind of what you're doing now. We're speaking to you. You're in Memphis. You co-manage Ardent Studios. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, that's a great way to put it. John Fry and I manage the studios, and John is the primary owner these days, but he's the founding father of Ardent Studios, Ardent Music, and, you know, he also engineered and mixed the first three Big Star records, the studio albums. So I've been working with John for a long time. And oddly enough, my first day to report to work, the Replacements were here working on Pleased to Meet Me.
Right. Another classic.
Yeah, it was a really nice, memorable first day at the studio.
Certainly no coincidence that they decided to record at Ardent.
Yeah, having been in Big Star has really been helpful in my job here at Ardent. It's a great, you know, just sort of icebreaker or a great introduction to some people, and as a result, we have bands like The Replacements and REM and Afghan Whigs and Primal Scream and folks like that come to the studio.
Right. Well, I hope they all appreciate you, Jody.
Appreciate them.
All right. Tell us about the songs you wrote on the new record, Best Chance and February's Quiet.
The approach to making this record was to write and record a song a day for 15 days, and then we take 12 of those songs and do overdubs and mix. So it, we would show up in the morning and somebody bring up an idea for a song, and whether it's can, you know, with a rip or something, when we'd all get out in the studio and try to develop that into something. And that's sort of the process. And I went home after a session one day and took my dog for a walk, and, you know, all of a sudden, February's quiet, the lyrics and melody line came to me. And just out of nowhere, as it, you know, I think it does with a lot of people. Was, you know, probably about 75% of the way there. And I sat down with John Auer the next morning, and we banged it out. I would say 75%, I mean, lyrics and melody line. John, you know, put all the chords, and we did the arrangement of the song together, and got it pretty close. And then, you know, Alex and Ken added some things. So it's, you know, the song gets basically written one evening and one morning, and then recorded that afternoon. And it's pretty much the same way with Best Chance. You know, it's except I had not quite the developed idea for that, and sat down with John first thing in the morning, and we got it, you know, 85% of the way there, and sat down with, then went, you know, went in the studio with Alex and Ken and completed it. So it was all pretty freshly written when it was recorded. It's I love the way it turned out. I like the fact that, you know, we were all just allowed to let things happen. And in some cases, you know, the lack of familiarity with the song would cause something really interesting or fascinating to happen that might not have happened otherwise, if it had been a studied, really thoughtful process of approaching the songs.
Right.
So it's all, you know, it's all pretty spontaneous. And it's, you know, I love the way it all turned out, but, you know, it was really challenging at times. You know, you have studio time booked, and the clock's running, and you're spending money, and it's, there's a lot of pressure to get that song written and recorded.
Right.
So, but again, another positive. For me, I was a little anxious because I was the guy dealing with the record company, and, you know, probably the first session that we all got together, it was difficult to tell what we had, because we really, if I remember correctly, we had a lot of song ideas, music ideas, but no lyrics and melody lines yet. I think all that came in the rest of that came in the second session. So it's, you know, it's, here we are halfway through an album, and I'm not sure what we have. I'm making a short story long, but, you know, it all worked out in the end, and it worked out really well, I think.
Sure did. It's and it's certainly a diverse sounding record. And speaking of, you know, your contributions, songwriting wise, you know, it seems that you're kind of held up as the one who's, you know, loyal to the quote unquote classic Big Star sound, you know. And Alex, obviously, his stuff's a bit more. I don't know, what would you say, spontaneous or whimsical, unpredictable, perhaps. How does that, you know, that role that you seem to be cast in, at least with, you know, some of the fans and maybe the press, how does that sit with you?
Oh, it's just fine. It's hard for me. I you know, I'm in a lot of respects, I wish I were a good enough writer to be able to sit down and say, okay, this is the type of song I'm going to write. You know, I don't have that luxury. It's just, you know, it's not like I'm prolific. I seem to write under pressure when, you know, I have to. So it's just whatever comes out. And, you know, sitting down with John Auer kind of helped color or flavor those songs. But, I guess that's what I'm most comfortable with, and that's just the style of writing that comes spontaneously for me, is that style of writing. You know, I think Alex can probably do anything he wants to do. in the way of writing. But yeah, he's more whimsical, and he's a bit freer than I am in a way that, well, I don't sing much either, so I don't have a lot of freedom in the way I can express myself vocally. But you know, somebody like Alex, who has a tremendous control over his voice, can do. You know, he does some pretty kind of letting go kind of singing, spontaneous or what, pretty spontaneous vocals in Love Revolution and some other things that just knocked me out to have that kind of a free spirit like that, but be able to be able to implement that and deliver it vocally is pretty cool.
Right. I'm kind of curious. Does Alex ever feel like maybe he's in a position where he has to apologize for some of that stuff that he writes? It seems to me like there's a certain, probably a pretty large segment of your fan base that really they want to hear, you know, the stuff like the first three records. And obviously Alex has done a lot of different stuff, you know, in the intervening 30 years. How does he kind of sit with those expectations of what, you know, the fans are looking for versus what he really wants to do as far as following his muse?
That's a good question. I've never asked him. I don't know how he sits with that. It's interesting. You know, we're all in a band together, but we don't really. Alex lives in New Orleans. John and Ken. Well, I guess John lives in Seattle, and Ken is based in Paris now. So it's we don't really have those, you know, moments where we just kind of talk and figure out what's going on with each other.
Right.
We're all busy doing other things. So, but that, you know, that's a good question, and Alex should do an interview and answer that one.
Right. Well, I take it that's something you're cognizant of, kind of the fans' expectations, the fans. You know, I'm sure it's a natural tendency with anything you love dearly, you know, and here's an opportunity years later to hear it again, and obviously you want, you know, to hear that. I'm sure it's something you're aware of.
Yeah, there's a there are a lot of songs that I would love to do as part of a big star set, and you know, it just for whatever reason it doesn't work out, and to some extent it brought about our recording a new record was so we could have some new material to play live.
Right. You know, you speak of Ken and John, of course, fellas from John Auer and Ken Stringfellow of the Posies. Obviously a good match there, and you know, obviously that Posies big star connection very much makes sense. Are you guys friendly maybe with some of the other kind of contemporary power pop torchbearers, you know, folks like Teenage Fan Club, Matthew Sweet, Jason Faulkner, Brendan Benson?
You know, I've I've met Jason Faulkner, I think I'd even sit on a dinner table with him once upon a time. Yeah, Matthew Sweet, I know pretty well. Matthew and I, and Mike Mills actually sat down and recorded a version of Ballad of El Gordo. And yeah, the REM guys, it's interesting. I was traveling to Nashville. Arden's based in Memphis, and on kind of a marketing mission for the studio, you know, just to wave the flag. And I read that REM were recording there, so I called the studio and left my name and number. And Peter Buck called me back. So we went out to lunch, and then he took me back to the studio and introduced me to the rest of the guys, and they wound up coming to Arden for their next record, which turned out to be Green. But yeah, I get a chance to, and the Teenage Fan Club guys, we actually recorded a version of mine exclusively with them in 93.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, 93. And that's kind of what inspired our doing it on this record. Is the band showed up one morning and no one really had an idea for a song that day, and the assistant on the project, Adam Hill, brought up mine exclusively, and he actually brought a CD that he had recorded and into the studio, and we had to listen and thought, gee, why don't we do that? And so that's how that came about. But yeah, it's Big Star has been a nice bridge builder to meeting a lot of people I have a tremendous lot of respect for.
Right, a lot of great stuff happening that was, you know, you guys certainly had a hand in creatively. And you know, it's interesting. I think it's February's Quiet. It's one of those instances where, to me, it kind of betrays the influence of the people you influenced, namely Teenage Fan Club. At least that's what I hear. So, you know, you influenced them, and certainly, I don't think anyone would argue that. And then, of course, you record a new song, and it's like, oh, there's a little bit of, you know, Teenage Fan Club in there.
Oh, really? Hey, that's cool.
Yeah. So, anyways, let me ask you about, do you keep in touch with the Replacements guys?
I just, Tommy Stinson just came through town recently, within the last couple of weeks. He was playing bass with Soul Asylum, and they came to town as part of this voodoo music festival thing that happened in Memphis. It moved up from New Orleans, but it was great to see him. I hadn't seen him in a while, and of course Danny Murphy, who's in Soul Asylum, is also in Golden Smog. So I've done some work with Golden Smog this past June.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
So I'd seen him. I haven't seen Paul Westerberg. He came through town not too long ago, in the past 6 months or something. But I think I was out of town and wasn't able to go to the show. So I haven't seen those. With the exception of Tommy, I haven't seen Paul in a while.
Okay, can we expect a new Golden Smog record pretty soon?
Yeah, I think that's coming out in the spring. And I just was able to play on four tracks of this new one. It's Things Here at Ardent have I just needed to be here. So I wasn't able to get away for that long a period of time, but I did get in four songs with Golden Smog just to keep my membership valid and up to date.
Right.
And so that'll be out in the spring.
And same group of guys, Jeff Tweedy, guys from the Jayhawks, and
Danny Murphy and Craig Johnson.
Okay. Same group. Where are they recording most of that stuff?
In Minneapolis.
Okay.
Yeah, I flew up to Minneapolis to do that and actually had a good time doing it. Had a great time. It's always fun to sit down with people who are that creative. I mean, it was like the Big Star session, too, the way things unfolded and how guitar parts just popped up out of nowhere. And, you know, it's a pretty remarkable talent. But it's also, you know, sometimes you just connect with, as musicians, there's either some chemistry there or there's not. And I've just gotten lucky a few times in my life with, you know, being a part of Big Star and being a part of Golden Smog.
I think you deserve it.
That kind of chemistry just happens with those bands.
Right. Okay. Why do you think, this has always puzzled me as a fan of quote-unquote power pop and, you know, power pop without the quotes, both. Why do you think that the best of this stuff never seems to do particularly well commercially? I mean, it just doesn't make sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah, apparently there's not that big of a market for it out there. I don't know.
It's
you
like,
know, for me, Nirvana, to some extent, was a power pop band, a pretty heavy power pop band, but. You know, those melody lines, and
right.
It was pretty raw and emotional, but I couldn't tell you why there's not a bigger audience for it.
Right, it's a bit puzzling. I mean, you look back, obviously the debt to the Beatles and the Beach Boys and stuff like that, all of whom sold, you know, large amounts of records. And, you know, I think I saw Jason Faulkner once, and he made a remark that someone at his label when he was on Elektra said that his stuff was too ambitious or too difficult or something like that. Almost like, you know, you need to dumb this stuff down a little bit. You know, it's like, so that says to me, it's like, it's too good or something, right?
Yeah, there's that aspect of, you know, from a label or something isn't dumbing this down, but there's also the aspect of, I think, you know, something can be a bit intellectual and be really clever and brilliant, but sometimes those kind of, and I'm not saying that that's the case in Jason Faulkner's situation, but it's something can be so intellectualized that you think, wow, and it just sort of washes over you and doesn't really wash into you,
right?
And it's not a matter of dumbing down; it's just a matter of just letting something like inside of you out. Something visceral happen along with that kind of intellectual input.
Sure. Okay. Well, we're almost out of time here. I just want to ask you quickly, any plans for a tour? Can we expect to see you guys on the road?
Well, right now we're looking at Stockholm, Utrecht, and Ghent. It's it's not all Scandinavia, is it? Northern Europe tour. Utrecht's just outside of Amsterdam, and Ghent is just really about 30 miles outside of Brussels, Belgium.
Okay.
And it's a long story. I mean, I'm not quite sure how all that came about, but maybe the Posies were going to be in Europe, and it just seemed easy, and we'd been trying to make something happen for a long time, and this started working out. But and it looks like February 18th, 20th, and 21st for those dates. And, you know, we'll hopefully add, you know, U.S. dates as time goes by. I would, but it's just been difficult with the Posies being on the road and you know, Alex's schedule and mine here, too, actually, to book any sort of proper tour. I think we'll probably wind up doing one-offs, like jump up to New York or out to Los Angeles, and actually maybe do San Francisco and Los Angeles in one leg. But it's that's what's fun about all this, is playing.
Sure.
I'd love to.
Do you miss it?
It's always a gas. Yeah, of course I do. I you know, we don't ever do it so much that I get sick of it or burned out. It's always a pleasure, and it's always fun and fresh when we do it. It's pretty exciting. It's the kind of thing that awakens up every emotional door in your whole body when you do that.
Right.
It's a good time.
Okay, Jody, we're about out of time. Again, we're here with Jody Stevens of Big Star. The new record is In Space. It's fantastic. It's on Ryko Disc, so pick that up. And thanks very much for being with us, Jody.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
All right. Goodbye.
Very glad to be here. Take care.